Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. For those of you who are just joining our podcast, we do use adult language in this podcast, so if that offends you, then you probably want to select another different podcast to listen to. The topic of our podcast today is Martyr, the death of suffragette Emily Davison. Emily Davison was part of the women's suffrage movement in Great Britain around the turn of the 20th century, and she became a martyr when she ran onto the racetrack at the Epsom Derby, a big horse race over in Great Britain, and was ran over and killed by the king's horse back in 1913. So we're going to talk about her life and everything leading up to this event. But before we do, allow me to introduce my co-host. I'm joined by the very distinguished, the very honorable, the most dangerous man in podcasting, a man who is has been called an oasis in the desert of despair, the moral compass of the History Dweebs podcast, the very honorable Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Chuck?
I'm doing well, Timmy. I'm ready for another podcast with that we can actually do historical stuff. And this is...
Normally, for our new listeners, normally we have a third member of our panel, and that's, of course, Brandy. But Brandy is on vacation or in rehab or... Yeah. We just don't really know where she's
going. We don't know. She might be in jail.
It could be. But we decided to do this podcast on Emily Davison. We've been wanting to do this for a long time, but we haven't been able to, have we, Colonel?
No, the devil is as loud and boisterous as she is. She's old-fashioned. You know, she grew up in a cult. And
she still is in a cult, really.
She's in a cult. And she doesn't believe in equal rights for women, Timmy.
Yeah. She's opposed to women's suffrage.
She believes that, yeah, she's for women suffering.
And she's for us suffering.
Mm-hmm. But she believes that women are basically chattel. They should they should be, you know, that she goes by the Old Testament stuff a lot.
Yeah.
Even though she's, you know, reads the Satan's Bible, the devil's Bible, but...
She's going to kill us. That, of course, none of that is true. Brandy is just on vacation. But we're going to cover this topic today. We hope you like it.
But you know that disclaimer you made in the beginning, Timmy?
Uh-huh.
I don't believe that this is going to be another E-rated thing because the devil's not here.
Yeah. Brandy so usually is...
There will be less foul language than you've come to expect from a show.
Yeah, because we take this show up a notch when she's...
Well, we're... We like to think we strive for professionalism, Timmy, mm-hmm. and the devil, she's just over there, you know, mm-hmm. eating pretzels or whatever. Yeah. She's playing Candy Crush,
cussing,
you know,
cussing like a sailor,
smoking cigarettes. She's got her feet up on the desk, not even close to the mic.
I know. And, just, but you're right.
Actually, so. I don't even know why we have her on the show.
But she's popular. She has a following, you know. But you know,
yeah, but I mean, you think about the people. Satan has a following. Mm-hmm. Manson had followers, yeah, for Christ's sake, just because you got followers.
He was a family man.
Yeah, but I mean, compare, and I want you to compare the, you know, because some people will proclaim, you know, hey, I'm Team Colonel, I'm Team Brandy.
On our Facebook page.
On our Facebook page. Yes. And I want you to just look at the group that claims to be self, the, as we call them, the vagina vigilantes or the mammary mafia. Look at that group, okay?
Okay.
And look at the moral code they live by. Yeah. I mean, it's quite lacking. And then you get to the Colonel crew, and you got nothing but fine, outstanding people.
You're a moral beacon, Colonel.
Well, yeah, and they've chosen the right path. These are all people that chose, you know, you got people like Radhika Fallon and Liz.
But then you got people like Jen Wicks and Amber, who is on the devil's path.
Well, Jim Wicks,
to hell, basically.
Yeah, basically, they want the highway to hell. They want the fast track. They want to go in a carpool lane with one person in a car to hell is what they want.
Yep, the express lane.
They don't want to wait around. So that's, you know, and I don't mean to disparage anybody. No offense.
No, of course not. Lord knows we wouldn't mean to.
We do not mean to offend people yet, but if you are Team Brandy, you might want to talk to your counselor about that.
Or your priest or...
Or your probation officer, because
or your exorcist.
if you know most of Brandy's people have probation officers.
Oh, yeah. Most of them wear the ankle
bracelets. Yeah. That's why they're Team Brandy. They can relate to her wearing ankle bracelets.
That's why I don't understand how Brandy is on vacation. She has to stay within so many feet of her house.
Well, she's doing a staycation. She's at home.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's what happened is that she violated it, and they gave a strict house arrest for 7 days.
That makes sense.
And
that
she
makes
couldn't
more
come
sense.
Back. Yeah.
Okay, we want to give a shout-out to all the folks who support us on Patreon. You guys have been wonderful in your support, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. If you would like to support the show, you can just go to patreon.com/historydweebs. Where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or...
Or just a wee tiny bit to me.
Yes, it all helps, and we are very, very grateful to all of you who've stepped up and been supporting the podcast. It means a lot to us, and we'd like to thank you. Alicia and Chip, Tommy Lane, thank you very much, Tommy, for your generous donation. Jason Dykes, who we will see, Colonel, at CrimeCon in June. Mm-hmm. Bridget Clavey, who's has a birthday today. You're going to sing happy birthday to her a bit later on.
Happy birthday to your baby.
Yeah, maybe later. Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover. Thank you, Maggie. Kate Richardson, Fiona Chris, who, of course, is traveling in Vietnam right now. Fiona, safe travels. Hope you're having a blast. Our good friend Laura O'Reilly, who posted some of the coolest pictures of cats. She has a page called the Purr Lounge on Facebook.
Oh, does she?
Yes. And they're just adorable kittens that she posts pictures of. And they're adorable. Christine
Bourgeois.
Yes, thank you, Christine. Donna Curran. Of course, our good friend Maja. Aaron, with an A. Kimberly Cameron. Elise, down there in Arkansas. Thank you, Elise. Scotty J. with the Killers, Cults, and Nut Job podcast. Thank you, Scott. Diane Student with History Goes Bump podcast. Thank you, Diane. Amber Trevino, Annette Petre, Lise over there in Norway, Leslie Hager, Amber Scoville, Jahara, our good friend, our good buddy TJ Young, Dr. Jeff Chestnut and his lovely wife, Dawn, who we hope to see in the very near future. They'll be here in Cincinnati soon. We're hoping to get to see them. And Dawn, thank you very much for leaving us a very nice review on iTunes. You guys are the best. Andrew Happ.
Yeah, we hope you're doing good, Andrew. We know you lost your mother. And
we hope that you're getting along okay, and we're thinking about you. Cheryl, thank you very much. Holly Woodward, who we are now calling Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Shirley Strapp. Thank you, Shirley. Todd Long. Of course, Lydia Fisher and her sister, Mary Ruth. Thank you, ladies. Jennifer Rasnick, our good friend Tyrone, Phyllis Munson, thank you, Phyllis, Sarah Morgan, Melissa Montoya, Brittany Martin, of course, Joe Hopkins with the Now American History Podcast. If you haven't listened to it, check it out. It's available on iTunes. That's Now American History. Mandy Swanson, Jennifer Siemens, and her son Hunter, as well as her mother Linda. Of course, our good friend Cindy Liu, Heather Poole, Charlie and Allie with the Insight Podcast. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the Insight Podcast, but if you're not, need to check it out. It is excellent. Stacy, Christine Hauer, and Jeffrey the Wonder Cat, Cheryl Weldon, Daniel Bassett. Thank you very much, Daniel, for your kind and generous donation. Our good friend Karen Barnes from Cleveland, big Cleveland Indians fan. Thank you, Karen.
They're going down this year, Timmy.
Yeah, I think
they're
the Reds are going to take them down.
They are going to take them down.
You know, we'll be kind to Karen because she supports the show. But, you know, maybe there'll be an All-Ohio World Series. Maybe that'll happen.
We would still beat them.
Karen Alden. Karen has been on our page, and now she is a new member of our Patreon group. Thank you very much, Karen, for supporting the podcast.
Rebecca Omelet.
Rebecca Omelet on the list now. Thank you, Rebecca. You're awesome. Thank you for becoming a Patreon member. Of course, our good friend, Rachel Flynn.
Oh, lovely Rachel.
Yes.
She's on Team Colonel.
How about that? And last and least, Rudy the Wonder Dog.
Rudy's had some complaints about the last couple podcasts.
Well, you know.
Rudy likes to have Brandy on the show.
Does he?
Yeah.
So he misses Brandy.
Rudy misses Brandy. He's like, you know, he's like, you know.
Does he howl?
Well, the thing is that he likes to know where Brandy is at all times.
Well, I don't blame him there.
And when she's not on the podcast.
He's worried.
He's worried.
Yeah.
Because Rudy's a protector.
Because Brandy will kick a dog.
Oh, she'll kick a puppy in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I mean, we remember that day we were walking in here, that litter of kittens that was
there? Oh, yeah.
And she was like, oh, I don't know why somebody.
She'll go out of her way.
Yes. Yeah, she walked all the way across the parking lot, slapped a kitten in the head, walked all the way back.
You know we're going to get in trouble for, not with just Brandy, but with all her followers. They're going to give us hell for this.
You know, it's time to make a stand against the followers. They're immoral. They're not righteous people. But, you know, some of them are pretty nice.
Yes. They're all very nice.
They're all very nice. They're just misguided.
But they can be
misguided.
Vicious when they feel that Brandy is being attacked. But
they can be.
That's okay.
And Brandy is like, you know, Brandy is like the, Brandy is like one of those panthers you see walking around.
Yeah, she don't need a whole lot of protection.
No, and me and you are just like, you know, little groundhogs walking around.
Like,
and all of a sudden
like
people
doves.
Are like, we're like doves. We are like doves, Timmy. And people are like, oh, she's the victim. No, she's not the victim. She swoops in, grabs us around the throat, rips our throats out all the time. I mean, how many times has she ripped out my throat on this show, Timmy?
Oh, almost every podcast.
Damn near every podcast. Yeah, lucky I got a voice
you
left.
You come almost every podcast you leave your bloody.
I leave you. I have to put a tourniquet on.
Yes, yeah.
So don't feel sorry for the devil. Don't have sympathy for the devil.
No sympathy for the devil. All right, well, Brandy will be back with us next week, so let's enjoy it while we can, Chuck.
Yeah, we can do something that's, again, we're doing an
intellectual podcast.
This might be a little intellectually challenging compared to what we normally do.
This is moving, but it does include a gruesome suicide, which is, you know, that some of our listeners, you know, they like that dark stuff.
This ain't going to fly with Dottie because only one person died.
Yeah. But no, I actually told her what the story was today, so she's interested in hearing.
Okay.
So, okay.
Because you know Dottie like a lot of blood.
Yeah,
she likes a lot of blood when
there's a lot of victims. So anyway, the topic is, the name of the podcast is Martyr, the death of suffragette Emily Davison. And by the way, if I call her Emily Dickerson, please kick me or something, because it's bound to happen. I think there's a new movie out on Emily Dickerson, so I'm going to try not to make that mistake. But Emily Davison, Colonel, the right to vote is something that we all take for granted. I know you don't take it for granted, but a lot of people do.
It's a sacred right to me.
Yes.
It's a sacred thing.
It's especially a sacred right for women because it took them years of struggle, not only in the United States, but in our focus of our story is women's suffrage in the United Kingdom. It took them years of struggle to get the right to vote, Colonel. They had to risk prison or even worse to gain that right. There's a lot of sacrifices made by women like Emily Davison, who we're going to talk about. In the Victorian era, Colonel, women were seen, by at least the middle class at least, as property of their husbands. I know you would never support such a notion.
I believe that women are strong.
Mm-hmm. Intelligent, equal, if not better than us.
If not better. You know, I just actually said something to in a PM to Nicola Reed,
mm-hmm.
that once you understand that men are stupid, mm-hmm. and they don't act in their self-interest, then you have a better, then you can deal with them easier. Because, you know,
we are pretty stupid.
Yeah. If it weren't for Renee, I'd be homeless. I'd be a hobo wandering the streets.
We're not only stupid, but we're ugly. Men, I'm talking, talking about men.
So when women, they're just, you know, they're intelligent and they're soft and they have.
They're just better. They're just better people.
they are better people than us. Yeah.
The exception, of course, being
Brandy. Yes. Yeah. She's very, she has a man mentality or something.
So anyway, I want to apologize if I sound funny.
Think about this.
Sinus infection.
This is funny to me. Think about our last election.
Mm-hmm.
Who decided our president?
Yes. Women.
It was women.
Yes.
That decided it.
Yes.
So, I mean, they...
They play a vital role.
Went from not having a... Not even being able to vote. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm still not sure they should be able to own property.
Well, yeah. You know, you can't take something too far. You're only kidding. We're only kidding. All right. So, anyway. So it was a struggle, not only in the United States, but in Great Britain, where our story takes place. Women were seen as basically the property of their husband. They were there to clean the home, put food on the table, and raise the children. Now, of course, they also worked outside the home in often terrible conditions, along with their children. Women's rights were extremely limited, losing ownership of their wages. If they worked, the rights to the wages went to their husbands. They had no right, as you mentioned, Colonel, of physical property. And often, if they got divorced, they would lose everything, including the custody of their children. When a Victorian man and woman got married, the rights of the woman was legally given over to her spouse. Under the law, married couples became one entity, and the husband would represent that entity. Placing him in control of all the property, all the earnings, all the money, and as we mentioned, the children.
That just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, guys should not have that responsibility.
No, I walked past Mrs. Colonel the other night. She was sitting down at the computer in the office at the house, and I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm just paying some bills." She was online.
Mm-hmm.
Timmy, one time mm-hmm. I had a phone. Mm-hmm. She was on a plan, I was on a plan. And
separate phones?
Yeah, I had a separate phone. My only bill I had to pay every month was that cell phone, the cell phone bill for myself.
Uh-huh.
Every other month, my phone would get turned off. Every other month. And I could get right online and do it.
Yeah.
But every other month, I would not remember to pay that bill until I went to use my cell phone and it didn't work.
You better be glad you were not responsible for the gas and electric.
I know. It'd be dark around my house all the damn time. But I thought about that because I thought, you know, I have never sat down. I don't even know what bills we have.
See, you would never have survived in Victorian England.
No.
If you were responsible.
No. I would have been, that's why I'd been all for women's rights.
Yeah.
I'd been like, let them have the money, let them figure out what to do with it. Cause.
Exactly. So in addition to losing money and material goods to their husbands, Victorian wives became property of their husbands, giving them their rights to their whatever their bodies produce. Again, children, sex, and labor.
Now, see, that's not a bad idea there.
Oh, you like the idea of having control of Renee's body?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, there's certain...
She may feel different. See, I have to stop here because Brandy would be cussing you at this point.
She would be cussing me. And that's
you have no boundaries now. That's why it's a little bit scary.
No, I'm just saying that...
Fairer sex is not represented here.
I climbed up, Timmy. Mm-hmm. I climbed up a ladder 15 times cleaning out the gutters.
Okay.
Now, she sits at a computer and pays the bills.
Right.
But she ain't risking life in them. I'm risking life and limb. I mean, I could have fallen off the ladder.
Yeah, but look at it this way. If she got up there and took that risk and she fell off, that would be a greater loss.
Well, sure, it'd be a greater loss, but yeah. And I think that's why she has me do it.
Of course.
But so I think that there should be payment in kind.
I see.
Let's just admit.
Well, maybe you should have lived in Victorian.
Men do the physical stuff around the house. I mean, the hard, physical, dangerous work for the most part.
I don't think that's true.
And, well, my head it is.
Oh.
And,
you unclog the,
Unclog
the sink or something?
Unclog the sink. I do.
That is dangerous. If
something's wrong with electrical stuff, I fix the I don't even turn the things off. Breakers.
Uh-huh. You just jump right into it.
I just jump right into it with the wires hot. But anyway, I think that with that, it should give me certain rights to her physical possessions. And by physical possessions, I mean, you know, her boobs.
Yes. Well, you would have been happy then living in the Victorian England because marriage... took away the woman's rights, basically she had no right to deny sexual intercourse with her husband. He had complete ownership of her body.
And I'm looking at the downside of that, didn't
you? I know.
Where's
the
downside?
If the couple divorced, custody of the children as well as all the property rights were bestowed upon the man.
Oh, hell no. If we got divorced, those three kids are going with Renee.
Well, see, you wouldn't like that. So you got to take the good with the bad.
Those three idiots with me.
Many women, divorced women, were not even permitted to see their children again. So it kind of sucked.
Damn. It was harsh back then.
Yeah. Although not legally sanctioned, Colonel, you're gonna like this. It was permitted by custom for wife selling, quote unquote, wife selling to take place to end a marital relationship. A man's wife, since a man's wife at the time was his property, by custom, this is not by law, like you said, by custom, he could sell her like chattel. So they would have these, these wives' auctions where they would take, if a guy and a woman decide that they were going to get divorced or he decides he no longer wanted her to be his wife, he could actually sell her, just like he was selling livestock or something.
Well, so. Much like you would sell a car that starts to get a lot of miles on it and is breaking down, Timmy.
Dude, you better be careful. Yeah, you better be careful.
I'm just saying I would never compare a woman to a broken down car.
I think you should not, yes.
But... sometimes you look and you see, this one's going to have, my car's starting to have transmission trouble. It's just better to get rid of this one and invest in a new one, a newer, shinier, more reliable model.
I understand what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. The man would parade his wife around by her arm or waist and sell her to the highest bidder. That practice actually continued. Into the 20th century, so it's not that long ago.
So wife selling. Now, I heard of wife swapping, but
No, this is selling. It's not swapping. For women who worked outside the home, they were often subjected, of course, to lower wages, not any different. That still continues, right? Women makes, 70 cents for every dollar that a man makes?
It's kind of the reverse in my house.
Well, and you're in a unique situation, but in most cases... Women doing the same work will make 70 cents on the dollar normally. And, of course, they were subjected to sexual harassment, which, continues yet again today.
It does. It doesn't continue here because I went through that civil treatment.
Yes, I know. You've been trained properly. Women often...
Now, the devil, how many times you seen her grope me, Timmy?
Well, none that I can think of. I see her hit you.
Well, that's kind of groping.
Yeah, I don't think that, I think she was getting pleasure out of it, but
yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I guess it's your definition of grope. Anyway, terrible, terrible things that the women had to go through then. They often worked in dangerous and unhealthy conditions of 10 to 14 hours a day. Their wages were, as I said, lower than their male counterparts. After a long, hard day at work, perhaps in a factory, they would come home and then have to care for their husband, their kids. They would have to cook and clean at home, do the domestic chores. So it was not a great time to be a woman, really. Women started to organize in the late 1800s to change some of these conditions. And of course, the first crucial step to change those conditions was to have a voice in the political process, namely the right to vote. Women's suffrage in the United Kingdom was a movement to give the women's the right to give the women the right to vote. It finally succeeded when and two laws were passed in 1918 and then finally for some women in 1918 and for every woman in 1928. But it was a struggle to get from Victorian era England to a place where women had the right to vote.
See, that's where men went wrong to me. They had it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it. I think the wife selling was the step.
You think it went a bit too far.
I mean, they had it pretty good. And then you push things.
The man had
you
it
push things
good,
the men did. And, mm-hmm. you know, your wife coming home from the coal mines, you know, you tell her to go take a bath, clean up, put on something pretty, cook me some dinner, do whatever.
Yeah.
And then now, all of a sudden, they organize it. And once you get more than two women together, Timmy, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's no good can come of it for men. For men. You know, once you get five or six, because I seen Renee will have, Renee's in a book club.
Mm-hmm.
She'll have those hens over to our house.
Those hens?
Those hens, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And, no, yeah. I say that.
Affectionately.
Affectionately.
Yeah, I know you do. You are going to get destroyed on the Facebook page.
Well, I'm
just
saying.
I
just
hope people can distinguish your voice from mine.
I'm just saying. What I'm saying here, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. You need to quit digging.
These females come over to my house.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they start talking about books, and they start talking about philosophy, and they start talking about things. And for the most part, they really don't like when a man interjects to tell them why they have it wrong.
Yeah, well.
You know what I mean? Usually. Especially when you haven't read the book.
And but especially when most of the time you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
But. You know, that doesn't stop me typically.
Yeah.
But what I have learned, it's gotten to the point now that when the women come over there for the book club,
mm-hmm.
I just go down the basement and hide because they have organized against me.
And
that's what these women have done here. They organized against the man.
They did. That's a perfect lead in because we're going to talk about the movement. The women's suffrage movement would not become a movement until 1872 with the formation of the National Society for Women's Suffrage and later the more influential National Union of Women's Suffrage Society, or the NUWSS. Now, they would have a radical wing of this party or of this group, Colonel, and that group, wing of this group was called the Women's Social and Political Union. And that's when we get into the ladies in this movement and men. They were men a part of this movement as well. So it wasn't, you know, they did have men who supported their cause. But they would take steps that the newspapers at the time would call terrorist type actions. I mean,
there was radicals.
They had bombs that they would blow up postal or mailboxes, I guess.
And who would teach a woman how to make a bomb?
Well,
That's just crazy.
Well, I'm just saying that they didn't do it to hurt people. They just was bringing attention to their cause. And you know how that goes when you do that. And there's certain members of society that would frown upon anything that...
it's not suitable for them to have bombs.
Well... I'm just saying they had no rights, so they had to take. It called for drastic measures, right?
I got a bunch of guns at home. I go target shooting all the time. You think I ever taught Miss Colonel how to shoot? No. No, somebody good... who was ever thinking about teaching women how to make bombs, they should have thought of that.
Yes. So anyway, as well as in England, women's suffrage movements existed in Wales and other part of the UK. They gained a momentum in other parts of the United Kingdom. And, of course, it was there was a movement here in the United States. Some of the states in the turn of the century, women could vote. Other states, it would not get that right until well after the First World War. But anyway, progress was slow, and the all-male British Parliament was reluctant to give the women the right to vote. That led to the suffragettes taking more extreme measures for their cause. They become more militant, and as I mentioned, they form this Women's Social and Political Union, the WSPU, which was led by Emmeline Pankhurst and her daughters, Christabel and Sylvia, who were very well-known suffragettes, who led that movement to help women gain this very basic right to vote.
They became the Booba Bombers.
The Booba Bombers, yeah, exactly. The government, for its part, did all it could to curtail the activities of the WSPU. It spied on the women and on the group. It encouraged the ladies' employers to fire them. It tried to not only fire the women who belonged to the WSPU, but to fire their husbands as well. The police would harass them. They would grope them. They would beat them when they held rallies. They would imprison them, and it wasn't until the women took the extreme step of going on hunger strikes that, the government backed off a little bit. The government was very afraid of having a woman, part of the movement, die in their custody because they thought it would.
Yeah, that would make them a martyr.
And they were very scared of that. So they would do these force feedings, and the force feeding was very brutal. They will hold the women down, put a long tube, insert it in either their throat or their nostrils, and force feed them, and it was pretty brutal business.
And they didn't have blenders back then, Timmy.
No, so it wasn't no slushy.
They were shoving salami sandwiches down in those tubes.
Exactly.
Stuff. Yeah. So, blood pudding. They was putting that kind of stuff in there.
Still, the movement remained mostly peaceful until 1910. The movement thought that 1910, that the time was right for the British Parliament to pass a women's suffrage bill. However, it didn't happen. The measure was voted down by the British Parliament, and that meant the women grew more and more impatient and started protesting more, taking more desperate measures to bring attention to their cause. Initially, this was smashing shop windows, blowing up mailboxes. Then it escalated to burning down of stately homes and bombing public buildings, including Westminster Abbey. So if that happened today, Colonel, you know that they would be labeled as terrorists.
Terrorists.
Exactly.
Actually, there was terrorists.
Well, they were taking steps
to
bring...
You blowing things up.
When you deny someone the basic rights and they take measures to... You put them in a corner, so...
Nobody put baby in a corner.
Well, nobody put baby in a corner. But anyway, let's talk about Emily Davison, shall we? Because she is the central part.
She's the linchpin of this.
Yes, she is.
She's the linchpin of this whole mob to me.
Yeah, well, of the story.
And it sounds like a mob to me.
Well, no, they weren't.
Sounds like an unruly mob.
No, not at all. They were trying to make things better for women.
She's probably drunk half the time.
No, that's not true. Anyway, Emily Davison, she was born on October the 11th, Colonel, in 1872 in London, England. Her full name was Emily Wildling Davison.
Wildling being the key word there.
She was at first only a minor player in the Women's Social and Political Union. Remember, that's the more radical wing of this movement. But she would... go on to become one of Britain's most famous suffragettes. She grew up, she was a bright student at a time when educational opportunities for women were very limited. After attending Kyneston Prep School, she took classes at the Royal Holloway College and at Oxford University, where Lady Beverly's daughter may be attending.
Yeah,
lovely
true.
Alexandra.
I believe she's leaning toward Cambridge. But
that is
sure.
Awesome. So Emily, did not. She couldn't officially earn a degree at either institution, which is that's kind of bullshit. And you take classes, but you can't earn a degree because she was a woman.
So what the hell did they go there for?
I guess to get an education. And when she left, she found work as a teacher. She eventually started dedicating her spare time to social and political activism. In 1906, that's when she joined the Women's Social and Political Union. And as I said, that union was established by famed suffragette Emmeline Pankhurst. And it was a struggle to win for women the right to vote in Britain. In 1909, Emily gave up teaching full time to devote herself full time to the cause. She was unafraid of the consequences of her political actions, willing to be arrested, and end up in prison on several occasions for various protest-related offenses. She spent a month in Manchester's Stranraer prison in 1909. She was treated harshly by the guards. She was subjected to physical and emotional abuse. If you haven't seen it, Colonel, I suggest seeing the movie The Suffragettes, which is, I believe, on HBO On Demand. Very good movie.
I see Norma Rae. Is that anything close to him?
No, it's really not. Nothing like it at all.
Norma Rae didn't get no beat down or nothing.
It was a simile. She was fighting for their rights, but that was a union matter, where this was for rights for women. So anyway.
Seen Silkwood.
Not the same. While in prison.
They got women. There was women.
Yeah, they were women.
About stuff.
And it's a movie. While in prison, Emily went on a hunger strike that resulted in her being force-fed and physical abuse. It came out later that the government would let them go after they were on a hunger strike for a period of time because, like I said, they didn't want a martyr, right? So they eventually would release him, but they may keep them a long period of time till they get to the point where they're near death. And you'd have these force feedings that took place that were just brutal.
That's a rough way to get early release.
Yeah, exactly. Many of the jailed women went on a hunger strike to protest the government's refusal to classify them as political prisoners. They felt they were political prisoners because they were fighting for a political cause and they were being arrested for their political
See, they always
got
to have something fancy. They can't just be convicts like everybody
else.
Fancy.
No,
we're political. No, you're a convict. You've been blowing up boxes, mailboxes. You blew up Westminster Abbey. You're kicking puppies all across the town. You're terrorists.
I don't think they kick puppies. That's Brandy.
Oh, that's Brandy. Okay, yeah. I get my women mixed up sometimes.
Yeah, me too, man. Emily Davison, while she was in prison on this hunger strike, she barricaded herself in her cell. And so you know what they did to get around that?
Smoked her out.
The guards flooded her cell with water.
No, it was fire water. They both work. I would have thrown a bunch of rattlesnakes in there.
Well, it got her out. It got her to the point where they could force feed her. Later, writing about the experience, she said she had to hold on like grim death. The power of the water that they just flooded her cell in was just ice cold. In 1912, Emily spent 6 months in Holloway Prison. Again, all the women there were treated brutally, and hunger strikes and forced feedings became routine. And in total, Emily was in prison 19 times. I mean, someone's dedicated. They go to jail 19 times.
19 times,
And she was force-fed.
I wonder if she had tattoos.
I don't know.
Prison tattoos.
I don't know. She was force-fed 42 times during her incarceration.
So, you know, there comes a point where I think she must have liked it.
I don't think she did. Force-feeding included being held down while held down while a tube is put in your mouth or in down your throat or in your nostrils, and milk, tea, and other foods were forced down the tube. It's kind of akin to really waterboarding, mm-hmm. Because the prisoner had very, you know, it was like he was drowning. They had a hard time breathing, and they would be gasping for air during this time. So it was a very brutal practice.
And this is back in the time when husbands, it was perfectly legal for husbands to beat their wives.
Yes, yes.
As long as they used a rod not thicker than your thumb, Timmy. That's where the rule of thumb comes from.
The rule of thumb, yeah. So the policy of force feeding was not put in place for humanitarian reasons, as we said. The government feared, what the thing the government feared the most was that one of these women would die in custody, and it would give their cause a martyr. So Emily Davison thought that she could end the abuse of her fellow suffragettes by jumping off a prison balcony and killing herself, which she attempted to do. She thought that in her mind that if there was someone would die, and someone being her in this case, it would save the lives of many others. That action just showed how far she was willing to go for the cause, okay? She survived that action, okay? So now...
She was not to be trifled with, this woman here.
No, she was very dedicated. So let's talk about the Epsom Derby, Colonel.
Okay.
The Epsom Derby is a major sporting event in Great Britain. It would be akin to... I don't even think there's anything here as big as a sporting event here.
It'd be like if you combined the Kentucky Derby, the Belmont, and the other one all in one.
Kind of like, I guess, would be closest would be the Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. The Epsom Derby, though, is held the first Saturday of every June. It's been around since 1780, Colonel.
It's actually more like a Super Bowl, Timmy.
It really is, and it's a chance for where everyday working people can really go to the Derby and rub elbows with the elite. You know, even the royal family attends the Derby, is known to attend the Derby. It's a big event, right? So, of course, it gets a lot of media coverage. And if you're looking to bring some
attention
to your cause, nothing would work better than to bring that attention at some major event like the Epsom Derby. So on June 4th.
See, if they would all showed up topless, that would have been scandalous back then.
It would have been. It'd probably be scandalous even today.
I think they just passed a law that women can walk around topless in the United States.
Oh, in the U.S., yes. Yes. Well, that's a good thing.
I'm wholeheartedly behind women having equal rights on that.
I know. You are for equal rights.
I am for equality.
When it comes to boobs.
When it comes to boobs, yeah. Boob equality, I am all for it.
On June 4th, 1913, the Epsom Derby was to be held. It was one of the biggest, as I said, biggest sporting and social events of the year. It was covered by all the newspapers, and at the time, it was covered by newsreels. Right? They had they had cameras at the events, movie cameras at the race, and they would film the race.
Now, this was after the Hindenburg, so they didn't have the Goodyear blimps.
No, this
was
before the Hindenburg.
Before the Hindenburg.
Before
they didn't have the Goodyear blimps up there.
Not yet. So, and they call it, by the way, they call it the Derby in England. We call it Derby.
Those people talk funny over that.
Well, actually, I think they pronounce it right, and we pronounce it wrong.
No.
But anyway, it was the Derby Stakes. It's a very popular event. It's of a race of three-year-old thoroughbreds, colts, and fillies. The Derby dates back to 1780 and is held annually the first Saturday of every June. Thousands of people attend. In 1913, that included King George V. And not only did he attend the event, him and the royal family, his horse, Anmer, I think I'm saying it right, A-N-M-E-R, Anmer, was running in the Derby. See how I say the Derby? See how I'm adjusting
the Derby,
to
you? You turn a Brit on me.
I am. I bet. You know, Lady Beverly understood me when I said that.
Oh, yeah.
She's probably, you know, we're on the same wavelength now. I apologize if I sound funny. I've got a sinus infection that's killing me. Anyway, the king's horse, Anmar, was in the Derby, and his rider was a famous jockey at the time named Herbert Jones. Now, it was unclear what, it's still kind of is unclear, what Emily Davison's plan was on that warm summer day when she attended the Derby, like thousands of other people. It seems clear that her intent was to advance the cause of women's suffrage, because with her to the Derby, she brought two suffragette flags. They had little flags, and they had their own collars. And,
oh, I'm sure they did, yeah.
She brought those with her to the event. While the race was underway, Colonel, and this is all, by the way, we'll, if you go to our Facebook page, History Dweebs, the podcast, this is all on film. Remember how the Christine Chubbuck suicide was on film? This was on film from 1913, and you can actually see this taking place. But
I
anyway,
still think the Chubbuck one poster was a fake.
Oh, the one
I
that came out.
That. Yeah, yeah. I don't
but it was it did air. I mean, it was caught on film.
Yeah, it was caught originally caught on film, but they only had they had one copy and they locked it up. And I don't believe that.
Yeah, that the one it was out recently. You mean?
Yeah.
But this one, this incident that we're going to talk about now was caught on film, and it was actually in the movie theaters. Of course, back in the day, they would show newsreels in movie theaters. It was out in the movie theaters by the end of the day. So they got
by
this
the
thing.
End of the day.
Yeah, the end of the same. June
I like
4th,
the voices they did on those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in England today. And.
Yeah.
They always had those squeaky little voices.
I like newsreels. It's kind of cool. Anyway, all dramatic and stuff. Anyway, while the race was underway and the horses passed a stretch of track where she was located, Emily Davison ducked under the railing and jumped right out in front of the horses. How much do you think a racehorse weighs, Carl?
A racehorse, I would guess, weighs probably close to 1,500 pounds.
Okay. So after several horses passed her, she stood with her hands raised in the path of the horse owned by King George V and Anmar, right?
Mm-hmm.
The king's horse hit her running at 35 miles per hour.
Oh, damn, that's faster than a bus.
Emily was thrown violently through the air and landed unconscious on the ground. Now, again, this is all on footage, right? We have footage of this, and like I said, we'll post, for those of you who are interested in seeing it, you can go to YouTube and look it up, but we'll post it on History Reeves, the podcast Facebook group.
Average weight of a thoroughbred, Timmy, is 1,256 pounds.
Okay, so a 1,200-pound horse going 35 miles an hour runs over you.
So it's like a Ford Fiesta coming at you.
Yeah, it's not a...
At 35 miles an hour.
It's not going to result in anything positive. King George V and Queen Mary...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
They were watching the spectacle unfold from their royal box. So she gets thrown in the air. Emily gets thrown in the air. Now, she ducks under this railing. She waits for the king's horse. And that's hard to see. Sometimes it's hard to see all these horses. All these horses in a pack
together.
But she waits until the king's horse approaches her, and then she jumps out in front of it. So she's hit by the horse. She's thrown in the air. Meanwhile, movie cameras are recording the events for newsreels.
You know, people who had money on that horse was pissed.
Probably so. The horse tumbles on its side, unseats its jockey. Remember Herbert Jones, the well-regarded jockey, Herbert Jones. And then the horse jumped back up. It was riderless at this point and runs away. The rider, so at this point, Emily Davison is on the ground unconscious. The jockey, Herbert Jones, is on the ground, hurt. The horse is knocked over, but it gets back up and runs away. Okay? Nearby, the woman, Emily Davison, lies on the turf, and she looks more like, she looks, if you see in the footage, she looks just like a heap of rags. She just crumpled there on the racetrack. The crowd, who a moment before had been cheering, surged toward the turf and the surroundings, surrounding the fallen suffragette. It was 3:10 p.m. on June 4th, 1913. It will be remembered as the moment in which the suffragette threw herself under the king's horse. The iconic image of the suffragette being trampled by King George's V's horse has come to symbolize the bitter struggle that women have fought to win the right to vote in Britain. But though the incident was caught by these were hand crank cameras, you know, the cameras back in the day. Old kind. They were filmed under. There is still some dispute on whether or not Emily did this with the intention of committing suicide, or rather, she did this. There's some thought, since remember I said she had those flags with her on her person, that really what she wanted to do was to put these flags on the horse as it ran by. So when the king,
as it ran by at 35 miles an hour,
it wasn't. I don't think it was well thought out. But she thought that she could put the flags on the horse, and then when the horse came across the finish line, the cameras would catch the king's horse wearing the flag, wearing the collars of the suffragettes. So that's the theory, okay? That's one theory.
I believe she had not discussed this plan with any of her cohorts.
That is one theory. The other theory is, of course, she sacrificed herself. She meant to commit suicide.
I'm going
to
go with the sacrifice because this woman been in prison like 34 times by now.
Yeah, 19 times, but yes.
So she learned. She got to be smart enough to know. She went to university. Now you see how I did the English thing there?
Oh, I did see it.
Went to university, and she got to know.
Well,
you can't just attach it to a 35-mile-an-hour horse.
Well, she was unconscious, and she was rushed to the nearby hospital where she never regained consciousness. Emily Davison died on June 8th, 1913. She was just 40 years old at the time. Even while she was those 4 days before she died, while she was in the hospital, she received thousands of letters, some offering support, but many of them could have been termed as hate mail because she had tried. There was more concern for the king's horse.
Well, she fucked up the whole derby.
And then they were for her sacrifice. And, of course, Herbert Jones, the jockey. You're going to talk a little bit about what happened.
Think about the Super Bowl. You have somebody come out, run on the 50-yard line, just take a dump on the 50-yard line, Timmy. Wouldn't be
there. There's bigger issues involved. It's a woman's right to vote. It's something that today we take for granted. People register to vote, don't even vote. Some people don't even register. This woman was ready to jump in front of a 1,200-pound horse going at 35 miles an hour to win that right, Colonel. But you got to admire that.
But you know what she never did?
What?
Voted.
True. She did not.
She never voted.
She never did. But thousands and millions would because of her efforts, and you're going to talk about that now.
Well, the aftermath of all this, Timmy, let's talk about that.
Okay.
The death certificate barely conceals the doctor's outrage here. He says cause of death was fracture of the base of the skull caused by being accidentally knocked down through by a horse. through willfully rushing onto the race course at Epsom Downs during the progress of a race.
Yeah, so he was taking shots at her even in the autopsy.
She had it coming, is what
That's
he
what
said.
He's saying, basically. Yeah. Right.
Now, on June 14, 1913, Emily made the return journey from Epsom to Victoria Station, for which she had bought her return ticket.
Now, see, that's the return ticket is one key piece here, Colonel.
That's true, because the return ticket.
Had she intended to commit
suicide, she would
have
bought a one-way.
Yes. However, I've also heard that because that event was such a special event,
mm-hmm.
and there were so many people traveling, that there's some belief that they only sold
They only
trip.
Sold two-way yeah. tickets. Well, she did get to use that second ticket on it for a return home. It was just in an oak casket, Timmy.
Yeah, it was not good.
It was not good. Not good at all. Four black horses pulled the funeral carriage. Six suffragettes, including Sylvia Pankhurst, marched alongside. The procession included 50 hunger strikers who, you know, could barely walk because they was weak because they was, you know.
Yeah. Food I mean, deprived. Basically what this did was to give them a martyr. They had a martyr yeah. now.
Some of these women was on release because of ill health, and hundreds of women's ex-prisoners marched along with them. Now, at St. George's Church, Bloomsbury, an estimated 6,000 women took part in the service. Now, how you like to get 6,000 angry women together? Yeah. I would not want to be around that.
It was a powerful show of support.
Yeah, it was damn right scary, I would think. More than 50,000 people turned out on the streets just to watch the funeral pass by. The coffin was taken to King's Cross Station and then put into a goods van for its final journey to Morpeth in Northumberland.
Colonel, you're just getting all this terminology down. I mean, I think you really could live in the UK.
I think I got a little bit of Brit in me.
Yeah, I think you do too. I think you would probably, you would be more of an aristocrat over there.
I'd have to be. I believe the Queen would knight me as soon as I got over there.
Probably.
You know, now how she might swing that sword hard enough to take my ear off or something.
Well, you know, she's getting up there.
She is getting. I wonder if she still, does she still knight the people?
I'm sure she does. She has to. I think she's the only one that can.
She got those shaky hands. I wouldn't want a sword up next to my head.
I think it just barely touched you, so I think you're okay.
They're supposed to just barely touch.
Don't worry about it right yet.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Cross that bridge when you get
there. I think I'm going to wait till they get a new queen to get knighted. But
yeah, cross that bridge when you get there.
Now, huge crowds turned out the next day in Morpeth as Emily was buried in the family grave. The newsreel footage that recorded the tragic event was in the theaters the next day, Timmy.
Oh, the next day.
The next
day.
This was like TMZ. They had shit up all over the place.
Breaking news.
But the archive footage of her protest does not answer the nagging question, did she mean to commit suicide at the Derby? Her protest was the latest in the series of militant outrages that appalled polite Edwardian society.
Now, see, you would have been a part of the polite society.
I mean, and this is where we get into the contradictory terms.
Mm-hmm.
They call it a polite society,
mm-hmm.
but men can hit their wives with sticks and
that's
nothing
not
happens
polite.
To them. That don't seem polite to me.
Mm-hmm.
Men
polite.
Can sell their wives.
Yeah,
that don't seem polite to me.
Yeah, that's not cool.
No, I mean, if you're a guy getting a really good deal on a wife, it seems cool to you, but
I don't know about that. I don't think you should be buying people, Colonel. That's
something
we condemn here at the podcast.
That does not seem polite, does it?
No. We condemn that here at the podcast.
We condemn selling people. That's
We take a stand on some of the most controversial issues of the day.
And we believe selling people, we are anti-selling people.
Yes, we're anti-slavery.
Yeah.
In all forms.
But when you think about it, that's basically what it was.
Absolutely.
Because these women had no rights.
Nope.
So once the guy bought you, the only thing, he had to fill out the paperwork for the title.
I'm telling you what, if I was a woman, I'd never be getting married back then. I think I'd say a spinster.
You know, the thing that women always control, though, Timmy, is what? you could be a man and force yourself on your wife.
That's not a cool thing.
No, not a cool thing at all.
Nope.
But, you know, they control really if you're going to be sexually active.
Well,
they control
They didn't have any rights.
Well, they didn't have any rights, but I mean, you know, if they're not going to be a willing participant,
well, they might not put in a good effort or something, if that's what you mean. But they under the law, of course, they didn't have any rights.
Yeah, but I mean, women are smart.
They are.
And
they're very smart.
Even if they have no rights and no legal rights, they can still figure out a way to make you miserable. You know that.
You know, we really should have had Brandy in on this podcast.
We should have. Because she is a prime example.
I think we're going to get in trouble.
How a woman can make you miserable.
Or you're going to get in trouble. Why, I am not saying anything derogatory about women. I love women. They're wonderful. They're smart,
intelligent. I love women that smell good, they're soft, they're squishy.
Continue, Colonel.
Okay. Now, at the inquest into Emily's death, the coroner seemed to speak for the nation when he said, "It is exceedingly sad that an uneducated lady should sacrifice her life in such a way."
That was a shot.
Yeah. Parliament and the press were united in their conviction that Emily had crossed the line. This was no longer justified protest, Timmy, but wicked madness. Wicked madness.
The pricks?
I don't know. Maybe she was a little wicked.
No,
she'd been in prison a lot.
Let's see when them stand out.
I don't believe that prison had rehabilitated her, Timmy.
I think she stuck to her beliefs.
The Morning Post reported the incident under the headline, "Sensational Derby Suffragist Mad Act."
Yeah, so they're making her out to be
to be a nutbag.
Yes.
The sensation was not the sensation was not the injuries to Emily. It was the fact that a 100-1 outsider, Abby Orr, had won the race.
That was the focus. Was the winner of the long shot.
So when they
the
said sensational derby, they meant the 100-1 person.
Yeah, the long
shot
won the race.
If you bet on the 100-1, this woman your hero because the King's Horse could have come back.
Yeah, I don't think the King's Horse was favored to win.
He must have been way back there.
Yeah.
Because if she waited for other horses to pass him by. Now, the paper was also concerned about the king's jockey, Herbert Jones, who'd been thrown by the Amnar, the king.
I do feel a little bad about this guy. I mean, he...
Yeah, he was just a tiny little guy.
Yeah, and he... I mean, well, you get to it. Continue.
Well, he had no bones broken. Two days later, they checked him out. He had no bones broken. 2 days later, while recuperating at his home, Jones received a telegram from Buckingham Palace, where the queen lives, Timmy.
Yes, she does, and a king at that point.
It had been sent by a palace flunky on behalf of Queen Alexandra, the queen mother. Queen Alexandra, it says, was very sorry indeed to hear of your sad accident caused through the abominable conduct of a brutal lunatic woman. Now, see, that's something we deal with every day here. The abominable conduct of a brutal lunatic woman.
That's not true.
No, we're just the devil. I'm just talking about
I know who you're talking about.
Come on, her conduct is always abominable.
All right. So not a lot of sympathy for Emily.
No, even the queen badmouthed.
Right.
Even the queen throwing shade on the girl,
yeah,
Timmy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I telegraph now by Her Majesty's command to inquire how are you getting along and to express Her Majesty's sincere hope that you may soon be all right.
Yeah, that's the jockey. They were concerned about the jockey and the horse, but not Emily, who was fighting for her life in the hospital.
Yeah. Now, the story of Emily's death and a little of her life unfolded at the inquest, which is held in a cramped police court in Epsom on June 10th, 1913. Police Sergeant Frank Bunn gave an eyewitness account. He had been on duty some 15 or 20 yards near the winning post. Several horses had passed him when a woman, supposed Emily Davison, ran out from under the fence, held up her hands in front of the king's horse, whereby she was knocked down and rendered unconscious. The horse had pitched over onto its head and stopped on the course. It received some slight cuts to the face and body, but not on its feet or legs. In his notes, Bunn listed the items that had been found on Emily. 2 suffragette flags, identifiable by their green, white, and purple stripes. That don't seem like a good color combination to me.
Yeah.
Folded up and pinned to the back of a jacket on the inside. They were 1.5 yards long and 3/4 of a yard wide, large enough for the racegoers to see if she managed to unfurl them. On her person, he found a small square of orange cardboard stamped with the number 0315. It is the return half of Emily's third-class train ticket. Third class. I didn't even know they had third class. To Victoria from Epsom.
Yeah, so she had a return ticket, and that was... has been touted.
Yeah, that raised the question, why would she buy that return ticket? Why would she take a holiday with her sister? Why would she book a holiday with her sister? It was scheduled for 2 weeks after the Derby.
Yeah, so she had made plans with her sister to go on vacation.
Yeah.
So why would she do that? She knew she was going to kill herself.
Now, the day before the Derby, Emily had met her friend Mary Lee, who testified that she seemed in high spirits, although that really doesn't mean anything. I'm going to the Derby, she said tomorrow. I'm going to the Derby tomorrow.
It doesn't sound like her at all.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But I know what you're saying is that sometimes people try to read people's expressions or their
Well,
their
you
mood.
Always hear about people that kill themselves that, you know, well, they sometimes before seemed like they were, they was in high spirits.
Sometimes they've already made the decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're relieved. Everything's off their shoulders. They made their plans.
Mm-hmm.
So she meets her friend Mary Lee and she says, you know, I'm going to the Derby. And she says, what are you going to do? And she says, she said, putting her head a little to one side, her eyes smiling, look in the evening paper and you will see something.
So she certainly had intentions of at least doing something to bring attention to their cause. Whether or not she meant to kill herself, that's the question, I guess, at this point.
Now, the jury decided in the family's favor that Emily was an accidental martyr. Suicide was a criminal offense for those who failed in their attempts and a source of shame for families at the time, Timmy. Now, having heard all the evidence about her character, her state of mind, and a railway ticket, the jury found that there was not enough to return a verdict of suicide. Her death was simply a misadventure.
Misadventure.
We've had a number of those in our lives, Timmy.
Yes, we have.
Now, at the inquest, Police Constable Edie, who was standing on the opposite side of the track to Sergeant Bunn, was asked by the coroner whether it would have been possible for Emily to pick out any particular horse. He said, I do not think it would be possible, the way they were bunched together. Now, this corroborated Bunn's evidence. The horses came along in a heap, not strung out at all. It was a close race, and between the first horse and the last horse, there was only a distance of a few yards. But on this point, they were both quite wrong. As Emily waited for the Derby to start at 3 p.m., she had marked her card for the preceding races and studied the form. She knew the horses, and crucially, she knew the colors of the rider's silks, Timmy.
Well, so she knew what horse she was going to.
Mm-hmm.
It was all... Whether or not she intended to kill herself or not, she certainly, at the very least, intended to put those flags or those banner around the king's horse. She was going for the king's horse. Whether it was to be run over by the king's horse or to put the collars of the suffragettes around the king's horse, she definitely had picked out his horse. She was tracking it, and later, when they do an analysis of the film 100 years later, they're able to see that.
Yeah, that she was going for the king's horse. Yeah. Now, she could not miss the jockey wearing the king's colors, even if she only had a split second to spy them. Herbert Jones' silk were of rich red sleeves and a blue body. And, you know, Mrs. Colonel, being very good at math and statistics and whatnot, we will go to the racetrack because it's, you know, it's the sport of kings.
Right. And you're of...
And
of
being
that,
a colonel, it's something...
Being an aristocrat.
An
like
aristocrat, yeah. And the Mrs. Colonel looks at the racing sheet. Then she walks down to the paddock, Timmy. And she has a system whereby the woman always makes money when we go to the racetrack. And do you know what the system is, Timmy?
What is it?
Now, I'm looking at the racing form, seeing if they're a mudder, if they've run, have they done the last 9 races, how this jockey's done. I'm doing all these calculations, you know, so I could figure it out. She picks the prettiest horse, Timmy.
And I bet she wins.
She does.
Yes.
All the damn time. That's her system. Mm-hmm. I just picked the prettiest horse. Mm-hmm. So, and if there's
meanwhile, you're doing analysis of the jockey.
Yeah, I'm doing DNA testing. And if there's a female jockey, she always bets on the female jockey.
I see.
And those women win a lot.
Yes, they do.
Now, the police and government, and get back to this story, the police and government clearly preferred the fiction that Emily was a mad woman, intent on a reckless act of martyrdom, and chose the king's horse by accident.
Well, again, they're trying to keep the movement
away from the monarchy.
Yeah. They're trying to keep the movement in check, and they don't want to create a martyr.
Well, because an attack on the king or its horse or his horse was not only unthinkable to me, it was seditious.
Yeah, treason.
Mm-hmm. And seditious, that's a good word that we would not have been able to use had the devil been there.
Yeah, that's true. I will agree with you on that.
Now, had the coroner called for the Pathé film to be shown at the inquest, he would have tended to agree with accounts that she could not have identified the king's horse in the split second before she was hit. However, if the jury had the benefit of modern technology, they may have had a different view, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
If they had HDTV back then.
Right.
In an enhanced version of the 1930 Derby film, far from being in a heap, the horses are strung out as they round Tottenham Corner into the final straight. Emily can be seen running through a gap in the horses. Now, that takes some stones right there.
Yeah, it does.
Then she stands quite calmly well away from the rails. She lets not one, Timmy, not two, but 3 horses fly past her.
Yeah, so she clearly knows which one is the king's
horse. She is taking her time to pick her horse. Amna is near the back of the field. As the horse thunders towards her, Timmy, she steps firmly towards it and puts up her hands.
I don't know what she thought was going to happen. If she thought she was just going to put the collars around the horse, she thought the horse was going to stop on a dime?
Yeah. It's like a train.
Yeah.
If you're on the train tracks, a train will stop for your car, but it will stop a mile after it hits your car.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to give it some leeway.
So half a ton of thoroughbred racehorse at full gallop smashes into her body. She is sent tumbling, her neck and head hitting the ground with each turn, Timmy.
Mm.
The inquest never found a reason for her action except as a mindless protest. But if she was not trying to kill herself under this horse's hooves, what was she trying to do? In addition to the 2 concealed flags, she also carried a scarf in the suffragette's colors, which was wrapped around her waist. Perhaps she intended to tie that scarf around the bridle so that the king's horse would be carrying suffragette colors across the finish line.
Yeah, because remember...
Suffragette colors.
Remember, they couldn't get any relief in Parliament.
Yeah.
So now, you know, they look to the royal families for support.
She basically invoked a nuclear option, Timmy.
She did. She did.
This would have been a very public petition to the king as he sat in the royal enclosure by the winning post had she succeeded.
See, I still don't think had she succeeded, I don't think it would have went over well either way.
I think she would have been in trouble.
Yeah, I do too.
Now, unfortunately, women's suffrage would take a back seat to a larger world when World War I broke out in 1914.
Yeah, the following year.
Now, women's right to vote in the United States became law on August 26, 1920, when the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was finally ratified.
Which you and I totally support.
I was not alive then, Timmy.
Right.
But I would have been out on the street marching with women.
I know you would.
Women should be able to vote. One year we had a primary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a presidential primary.
Mm-hmm.
And Renee and I was voting for different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, why don't we just stay home? let's just not
cancel
vote at
each
all.
Other out.
And she said she did not trust me to do that.
Well, she's probably smart.
Yeah, she's not a trusting woman.
Yeah,
sure. But finally, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was finally ratified.
Here in the United States.
In the United States. And, you know, not to get off on a tangent, but this has something to do with history. We just got a new Supreme Court justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's an originalist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he believes in the original text of the Constitution as it was written at the time, blah, blah, blah. You know how people mm-hmm. go on about that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the Constitution was so perfect, how come we got amendments?
Good point, Colonel.
That's my question to everybody. If the Constitution is so perfect, why we got amendments to it?
Yeah.
And we have amendments that we created amendments later to undo those amendments, like prohibition.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm just saying, that's just my view on that. And the UK Parliament finally gave equal voting rights to women 8 years later.
Yeah.
Because in the UK, things travel slowly.
Well, they had the First World
First,
War.
Yeah, and they lost they lost a whole generation of men back then.
But due in large part for the contributions that women made and sacrifices mm-hmm. that women made during the First World War, it was kind of incumbent upon the government and after the war to give them.
Yeah,
rights.
They could have, because they worked in the factories real hard for that.
Well, and on, you know, on.
And there weren't that many men around. If you wanted people to vote.
In the defense industry, they worked in, on the front lines as,
Nurses.
Nurses.
And half the men were dead.
Yeah, so. They lost a generation of men.
Now, today, the right for which Emily Wilding Davidson gave her life is taken for granted. Thousands of visitors walk past a glass case as they make their way to the public gallery of the House of Commons, perhaps little understanding its significance. It contains a faded, fragile silk scarf with green, white, and purple stripes stained with mud, Timmy. It is a scarf she was wearing when she fell under the king's horse. Now, the king's horse survived the collision, as did jockey Herbert Jones. Though, Herbert did suffer significant injuries from the event, including a mild concussion.
Yeah, it sounds like he had post-traumatic stress as well.
Yeah, he would go on to race another 9 years, retiring from racing in 1923. Despite resuming his career, he was haunted by the event for the rest of his life. In 1929, 15 years after her death, the death of Emily Davidson, Herbert Jones laid a wreath at the funeral of Emmeline Pankhurst in honor of her and Emily Davidson. And in 1951, soon after his wife's death and his onset of depression, he was discovered to have committed suicide after his son found him in a gas-filled kitchen. Now, that's
Jones, the jockey.
Yeah, the jockey killed himself and just turned his gas stove off.
Mm-hmm.
And that, listeners, is a crazy-ass thing to do. Because you might want to take yourself out, but you fill up your whole house with gas.
Yeah.
You're going to take out the whole block at some
Could
point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't be spiteful about it. Now, in the village of Long Horsley, where Emily Davidson's mother house still stands, Jane Cotton, who runs the cottage bed and breakfast, reports that no one asks about Emily these days because, you know, fuck, it was 100 years ago. Nobody remembers it. They don't seem to realize she lived here, she says. But Emily is not completely forgotten. Her grave is marked by a large stone monument with a cross on the top and the suffragette slogan, that reads, "Deeds, not words."
Very good, Colonel. You read that very dramatically.
Deeds, not words.
Colonel, your final thought on martyr suffragette Emily Davidson?
Well, I don't believe it really did a cause any good. It brought it probably brought some attention to it. But sometimes you got to be careful because you go too far and you can turn popular opinion against you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that happens with a lot of movements that people sympathize with the movement, but then they do this, you know, and in England, they love the royal family.
Right.
You know, so if you were to do something if you were part of a movement and it was considered to be an attack on the royal family, You know, it's kind of like the IRA with when they blew up Lord Mountbatten. Mm-hmm. You know, that was just going a damn step too far.
Yeah, but if her intent was not to hurt the horse.
Not to hurt the horse, but I think it brought a lot of bad PR to him. And I think it probably did him more harm than good. But, well, maybe not, because you know what? Eventually, the men's was going to make up their mind when they made up their mind. It was a train that was going to roll over them eventually.
But she was showed.
I think she showed great courage.
And people, how far that the ladies were willing to go for their basic right to vote.
Absolutely. So, I think she was
very inspiring story, Colonel.
Yes.
Right. You have some shout outs, Colonel.
You know what, Timmy? We're going to have to figure out a system for the shout outs.
Okay.
Because we've got so many, and I'm leaving people off. And I
think we're giving shout outs to people that perhaps maybe no longer listen to the show. That we haven't heard from on our Facebook page in such a long time. So we're going to come up with a better system for the shout outs. We'll still keep the Patreon shout outs, and we'll still do something in terms of shout outs at the end of the show. But we're probably gonna have a roll call on the page for folks who want to be included in the shout outs and not include people that we haven't heard from for months, really. So but if you're active on the page and on our Facebook page and our Facebook group, we'll include you. We're not gonna exclude you. But there's some folks that we just haven't heard from in a long time, and we don't know if they're still listening or not, right?
No, we do not know if they're listening or not, and as of now, we've got 270 on my
list. So give us some of the shout-outs, and then we'll work on that to make it.
Well, you know what? We got a new listener, Timmy.
Okay.
That we just did one 2 days ago, so I think I covered most of the new listeners. Yes. But we have picked up one.
Wait a minute. Before you start, let's give a two-year little rendition of Happy Birthday for Bridget.
Oh, I don't. Does Bridget want the Bee Gees version? She want the Colonel version?
Just give
version?
Her the Marilyn Monroe version.
Okay.
Make it sexy.
Let me give you the Colonel Marilyn version here, Bridget. Happy birthday.
Make her all tingly.
Happy, happy birthday to your girl. Happy birthday to Bridget, baby.
I don't know what you're
saying. Happy birthday, lovely Bridget Clavey. Happy birthday, girl. To you.
Happy birthday, Bridget. Okay, now get
happy birthday, Bridget. I hope that got you all tingly there.
Yeah, probably
made me a little bit tingly.
Probably made her nauseous, but continue, girl.
I know. I felt a little movement there when I was singing it. But
all right, shout-outs.
Shout-outs. We got a new listener, Timmy.
Okay.
She jumped right in and posted a selfie in that thread yesterday.
You're talking about on the History Dweebs, the podcast.
History Dweebs, the podcast page.
Facebook group. Please join us if you haven't already.
We have had some epic threads going on.
We really have.
And her name is Annie Harris.
Okay, Annie.
Beautiful, beautiful woman.
All right.
So I want to give her a shout-out.
And we support her right to vote.
We support your right to vote. We do not think that you should be sold.
No. We're progressive like that.
We are very progressive.
Yeah, continue, Colonel.
Fiona. Fiona Crisp.
Lovely Fiona Crisp.
Fiona Crisp.
In the Republic of Vietnam, as we speak.
Let's see. We got, Tasha. I mean, Tasha. And I don't know if I've seen a picture, but you know what? You only need to see one picture of Tasha and you fall
beautiful,
in love.
Beautiful young
you
lady.
You fall in love.
Yes.
And Miss Ophelia.
Mm-hmm. Her mother.
Jeff Girdley, of course. Missy Dean Horton.
Yes,
Britton
Missy.
Chris. Celine. Mm-hmm. Teresa Slavin. Tommy Boomershine. And, of course, Shonda and Larry.
Yes.
All of the Trowbridges. Phyllis Munson. Aaron Wentz. Donna Curran. Brian and Lisa Lawton. Olivia Meyer. And Katja. Just beautiful Katja.
The lovely Katja.
Birthday girl Bridget Clavey. Byron Snellings. Denny Mack. Gina Spillane. Sydney and Michael. Donna Hellman. Let's see. Laura O'Reilly, of course, John Cunningham, Dave Lampier.
Dave, yes.
Dave's a funny, funny guy. Maggie Glover, Jeff Appel, Christine, we got her already.
Christine Bourgeois.
Bourgeois. Katie Moorhead, Mary Ray, Andy Volley, Show Moose Q, Vicky Ann Wallace, Steve Miller, Nick and Molly. Yanka and Molly. Man, Molly's just a beautiful woman.
Very beautiful young woman.
I'm friends with her on Facebook, and she makes this jewelry.
Mm-hmm. And very talented.
The problem is she posts pictures of herself wearing this jewelry, mm-hmm. and you look at her, and all you can see is this beautiful woman. You ignore the jewelry.
I see.
So she needs to find an ugly model for the jewelry.
I see.
Natasha,
maybe you could model.
Maybe I could volunteer. My fat ass neck, you probably couldn't get one of those necklaces right. around it. Neil Eagleton, Tracy Busby, Allie Nett. Allie had a great little shout up there with a black lipstick. Christine Hauer, Robin Sanchez, Carly Madsen, Aaron Fowler, Rebecca Montale.
Allie with that goth look. I love that goth look.
Yeah. Rebecca, who I got into big trouble with my niece yesterday.
Why?
Rebecca Montanle said, I liked Colonel singing. Mm-hmm. And I put underneath there, you are my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And my niece, Dominique.
Did not like that.
Did about 10 screen captures of that. And sent me a text and said, I will await your apology.
So, Rebecca's lovely, though. She's beautiful.
Rebecca is lovely, but Dominique knows that she is my favorite.
She's closer to you and can do more damage quicker.
She's scary, yes. Yeah. But Mike Eisenhower, Danielle Fredrickson, Toby Deese, Nancy Jalapeno, Nancy, and here's another, Nancy and Kim Kazmersky Kamikaze, two just beautiful women.
Absolutely.
Jennifer Hawkins, of course, Chicago Lindsay O'Brien, Yo Handless, Sammy James, Sarah, Josh Hilly, Lori McNally, Monroe, Allison Shields, Cheryl Pierce, of course, Tyra Jenkins, Daniel Fredrickson, M. Waterfall, Susan Angles, Don Gordon, John Gray, Dave Hill, Kirsty Ramsden. I talk to Kirsty fairly regularly.
Very nice lady.
She's over in UK there, and very, very interesting woman.
She's probably more familiar with this story than we are.
She probably knows more about most things than we do, but
that's not saying a lot.
No, it's not. But Kirsty, hello to you. Sarah Morgan, of course. Erica Clements, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Becky Omelet, we've already covered. Michael Deo, Marissa Sanchez, Christina Stinson, Stephanie Pauling, Leah McAllister, Tamara Cola.
Okay.
Tammy Ennis, Valerie Murray.
I like Tammy Ennis. She's funny.
Yes, Tammy's very funny. Kristen Andreasen, Colin Nelson, Megan Smith, Angie L, Karen Alden, Norma DiMaggio, Callie Jones cracked me up yesterday when she said, I cut my damn bangs and I look like Garth from Wayne's World.
But I know she said that, but she's beautiful.
She is beautiful. That's what's so funny. But but the girl is just
on
so
our Facebook
damn funny.
Page. People were posting selfies yesterday.
Yeah, and Callie posted one, and she is just such a pretty girl.
We have a lot of beautiful women on our.
You know what? I was running out of adjectives.
Yeah, I know. I kept saying the same thing over. Oh, you're beautiful. You know, you're gorgeous. Like,
holy God.
Lovely.
You know, what? Every time a woman posts a picture, you're like, damn woman, you're beautiful. Exactly. And then another one posts and you're like, no, I just said damn woman. Yeah. I got to come up with something else.
Exactly. You need a thesaurus.
Yeah, all these women are very beautiful women. Let's see. Kelsey Froh, of course. Let's see, where am I? I forgot where I'm at. John Yankee, Jeff Hopkins, of course. Brittany Powell, Mike Arnold, Jennifer Potts, Maria Barber, Christina Montana. And Christina Montana, we told that story about, you know, why we love Christina so much about the house closing.
Yes, let's don't relive that. Perhaps you don't want us to talk about that.
No, but one of these days I'm going to tell you a story about from another listener about her adventures milking a goat. Now, if that listener wants to come forward and post that story on our webpage, on our Facebook page, I'll give a day or two.
Okay.
But if they don't come clean,
it's too good of a story not to.
It's too good of a story, and if they don't come clean, Maja, I will come out and tell them the story. So, let's see who we got here, Timmy. That I might be leaving out Charles Dent. I've got 6 columns of shout outs. I'm doing 3 today.
Okay.
So Andrea Odell, very lovely woman. Molly Fontenot, Lauren Mayer, Rachel Hummel. Let's see, Danielle from Between Us Girls.
Danielle Jones. Yes.
Danielle Jones.
She's going to be on podcast. We listen to the podcast. They're going to interview Danielle, and I submitted questions because
I could not get on to the thing to submit questions.
Well, you just submit it to Jeremy with on podcast. We listen to Facebook group. You know, she Danielle submitted some highly.
Highly questionable content.
Questions.
Yeah.
When I was interviewed, so I'm getting even. So
I've got some questions for her too.
Interview comes out. Yes.
So let's see. We got Paula Kimes, Virginia Massey, Maria Ortez, Brianna Stewart, Susan Capitano, Hannah Groskopf. Let's see where I'm at, Timmy. MJ Howard, of course. Rosanna Fitton.
I think she's on her way
from
to
They
Turkey.
Walk Among Us. Yeah, she's not going to listen
to this.
Yeah, They
Walk Among Us podcast. But
Stacey Flynn, Sarah Morgan, Justin, of course. Justin Brodeur.
Very funny guy.
Kim Stroop, Kristen Whiting. Let me see. Make sure I'm not. I've got my whole 3 columns, and like I said, if I missed you, you'll be on the next one.
On the next list, and we'll work something out so that we are focused on the folks who are still listening and who are active on our Facebook group page. So
yeah, this is where I pull most of this stuff from. Yeah. And if I did not get you,
let us know.
Let us know. If you have been skipped consistently week after week, let me know. Linda Middleton, like she said something, you know, I didn't realize I had missed her.
Yeah.
So who in the hell told me on the page the other day I missed them?
I don't know.
All of a sudden, son of a bitch, Sarah Bloom. I know I missed her, but it wasn't.
All right.
Okay.
So, but we're gonna post something on the
we're
page.
We're gonna redo
about,
this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna get a new list that's accurate. People who are still listening and who are still active on History Dweebs, the podcast.
History Dweebs, yeah. And then we'll get
Facebook group.
We get to the, of course, the Colonel's crew, all I right. like to call them, the really right. beautiful women on the page. Angie Ball, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Nicola. Mm-hmm. Allie posted a picture. She's a beautiful woman.
Of course.
So we called off the blood feud.
Oh, because she's beautiful?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you can't have a woman like that mad at me. Sarah Spaghetti. She's beautiful. Jennifer Burdick. Karen Barnes, who's lovely, lovely redhead. Janet Fitzgerald, lovely, lovely redhead.
Yeah, Karen Barnes is beautiful.
Well, Janet is too.
Well, sure.
But speaking of beautiful, our lovely Irish lass, Frances Doughton.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot, if you look up the dictionary, if you look up beautiful in the dictionary, you know who you're going to see right there next to it, Timmy?
Who?
Jessica Williams.
Yes, Jessica from Chicago.
There's
going to
be 2 pictures, Tasha and Jessica, and they're going to be right there.
Very beautiful women.
Shannon.
Of course, Shannon.
Amanda Bocciball. Tiffany Bell. You know she's a lovely lady.
From Michigan.
Monica. Beautiful woman. Angela Cobes. Radica, of course.
The lovely Radica.
Fallon. Little Fallon. The mascot of, and you've seen a bunch of pictures of her. Isn't she just one of the prettiest
Fallon
girls you've ever seen?
Fallon is going to be our next listener of the week.
Is she?
Yeah, we're going to do that when Brandy gets back. We're going to start.
And she's also the mascot of Team Colonel. Liz Keating. How you doing, Liz? Jen Wicks, who's, although the devil herself, on Team Colonel. Jennifer Siemens. Rachel Marie Flynn, lovely redhead.
Beautiful Rachel.
Donna Hellman. Jamie Tarantino. Jen Wicks, of course. And
Jen Wicks already.
Amber Krupp. Did I get her?
Yeah.
And Maja.
Trouble goes in pairs.
It does travel in pairs. Maja.
Yes.
Maja. Lovely Maja.
From Poland.
I do talk to Maja quite a bit.
She's a lovely lady.
She's a very intelligent woman. Very, very smart. And
goats, I hear.
Huh?
She milks goats, I hear.
She does milk goats.
Right.
Now, Maja, I'm going to... I told you that would be a...
future topic.
I told you it would be confidential. And as everybody knows who talks to me...
You never keep your word.
I do not keep my word. So it is not confidential.
Yes,
so,
but we're not going to tell the story until we get her permission. It's a very funny story.
No, we're going to give her a day to confess and see if she types it, because it's very funny.
Okay.
So... that's all I have. I think the woman here was, you know, we already talked about her. I thought it was a good podcast. It was relaxing to me. I feel zen-like.
Do you?
I don't feel like...
And you're doing your part for the equal rights.
I do my part every day for equal rights, Timmy. I go out and let my wife make more money than me.
That's nice of you.
Yeah, to balance
things out. You let her pay all the bills.
I let her pay all the bills in the house. Mm-hmm. I let her do all the cooking.
Make all the important decisions.
Make all the important decisions. Yeah. I just stay out of the way at my house, Timmy.
That's a good plan. So, people can find us, Colonel, on Facebook. We have two pages, History Dweebs, where we post a lot of history-related stuff. But where we have our most fun is on our Facebook group page. It's History Dweebs, the podcast Facebook group. Join us. All the people that we mention here, they're part of that group. And we have a lot of fun. Don't you think so, Colonel?
Oh, it's a... you make a lot of friends on
yes,
there.
Yes, you really
you
do.
Make
so
an
join
awful
us.
Lot of friends.
Facebook, the podcast. History Dweebs, the podcast Facebook group. You can also find us on Twitter. You can follow History Dweebs at History Dweebs 1, or you can follow the Colonel at Hawk Waters, and you can find us on iTunes. If you do, please leave us a review. We want to thank Don Chestnut for leaving us a very, very, very nice review. We really appreciate it. If you leave us a nice review, we'll give you a shout out on our next podcast. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you all next time on History Dweebs.
Good day.
Bye, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.